That lines, Israel pushes ahead with its much-criticized demolition policy, destroying Palestinian commercial facilities near occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds. The African Union suspends Mali from the bloc and threatens it with sanctions after a second military coup in the country in 9 months. And fears are mounting in the UK over the presence of far-right extremists in the British military. We'll bring you a report from London. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour, Israeli forces have demolished more Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian media say bulldozers, accompanied by troops, have flattened commercial facilities in the town of Hizma, northeast of Jerusalem Al-Quds. This is the latest in Israel's long-running campaign of demolishing Palestinian homes and properties. On Monday, Israeli forces razed to the ground several homes near Hebron, also known as Al-Khanil. Such violations are usually committed under the pretext that the structures have no construction permit. Israel is also pressing ahead with its settlement expansion policy in the West Bank in defiance of international outcry. Authorities have set in motion a project to build 350 settler units near Ramallah. The settlements are illegal under international law. Political expert Saad Nimr says Israel is pressing ahead with its expansionist policy to grab more Palestinian land before an international action halts it.
The settlers, as well as the government, took a kind of a step forward towards enlarging existing settlements and also to build new settlements and to demolish Palestinian houses and Palestinian facilities all over the West Bank. The settlers now are thinking that though the new administration in America came and they don't support them that much, but they want to grab as much time as they could before there will be a kind of an international stand against the settlers. So they are trying to fight the time and try to take the time that is necessary for them to build as much settlements as they are. Now we have these 350 units will going to be added to the settlement near Ramallah, Beit El, also enlarging lots of other settlements around and declaring building more settlements in Beit Lahem area and even in Jerusalem.
The Gaza Strip is still reeling from the latest Israeli onslaught. At least 253 Gazans were killed, nearly half of them women and children. About 2,000 were injured too. The Israeli attacks destroyed and caused damage to thousands of homes, leaving many displaced.
Gaza left in ruins following 11 days of Israeli attacks on the besieged Palestinian territory. Palestinians breathed a sigh of relief from Israeli attacks after a ceasefire came into force on May the 21st. Cities and towns were heavily pounded by Israeli artillery and warplanes, even at night.
هنا كانوا فيهم رعب وأمر من فيهم رعب تشوف تطلع الشرار يعدي في الدار القصف والمجر مش قادرين نتحرك مش قادرين نطلع أولادي حطناهم
Horror and panic go on. Some call their loved ones names. Others rush them to hospital. And many more grieving for their loved ones. This girl is crying as relatives are carrying the body of her 11-year-old brother, Hossein Hamad, to gravesite.
ما هم بقتلوا فيش حساب لهم ما هم بقتلوا فيش حساب العالم كله بتفرج ولو قتل طفل، لو قتل مرة، لو قتل إيش مجا، فيش واحد يحسبهم هذول الناس.
يا رب تسمعنا في يوم عن قريب يا رب.
This man and his baby are the only survivors of their family of seven. The baby boy, Omar, was pulled alive from under the rubble after an overnight Israeli airstrike hit the Shati refugee camp in the northern Gaza Strip. At the same hospital, six-year-old Susie was reunited with her father. Susie was rescued after she had been trapped for 7 hours under the ruins of their home. Her mother and four siblings lost their lives.
اللحظات الأخيرة إني أنا كنت أنا وزوجتي قاعدين في الصالون وعمال بننيم البنات. عددهم 3 بنات وولدين. حطناهم في غرفة آمنة. ربما إنه يكون في قصف في الشارع يكونوا بعدين عنه.
The Israeli attacks took a heavy toll on civilians and caused widespread devastation. But life goes on. Gazans now have to reconstruct their territory. However, it would not be an easy task with all the traumas of the war and problems caused by the years-long Israeli siege. Fears of a new outbreak of conflict is there too, as tensions simmer from time to time over Israel's continued occupation of Palestinian land.
Iran's president says the victories that the country has secured have been due to the people's resistance and patience as well as the government's prudence. Hassan Rouhani said Iranians put up a stiff resistance in the face of U.S. sanctions over the past couple of years. Rouhani then recalled that former U.S. President Donald Trump's efforts to counter Iran failed. He said Trump tried to rally support against Iran at the UN Security Council on numerous occasions, but to no avail. He said Trump was isolated and the U.S. was left alone even by its own traditional allies. Rouhani then said constructive interaction with the world is the way forward and a proper strategy. Iran's envoy to the International Atomic Energy Agency says the agency's latest report confirms that Tehran is implementing the country's strategic parliamentary law. That law limits IAEA access and obliges Iran's Atomic Energy Organization to press ahead with enrichment and other nuclear activities that go over and beyond Iran's commitments under the nuclear deal. From Vienna, Homolesky reports.
The International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA's latest report on Iran is the first since the country stopped implementing voluntary transparency measures as a result of a law passed by Parliament restricting agency access to nuclear facilities. Under a temporary agreement between Tehran and the IAEA valid until the 24th of June, the agency will continue to collect data at Iran's key nuclear facilities via its surveillance equipment, but will not be able to access that data. Iran's envoy to the IAEA, Kazem Gharibabadi, said the agency had no access that had previously been provided under the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA.
The verification and monitoring activities that the agency had in our nuclear facilities based on the JCPOA, as the Director General reflected in his report, actually all those areas have been stopped and the agency didn't have any kind of access in accordance with the JCPOA to our nuclear sites and also the nuclear activities in the nuclear facilities.
In his report, IAEA Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi estimated Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium to be about 16 times higher than the limit set in the deal. Gharibabadi said Iran is continuing to enrich uranium at the level of 5, 20 and 60%. The limit set in the deal was 3.67%.
There is no suspension in the nuclear activities, such as installation of production, installation of new machines, and also the enrichment level and the stockpile. So it is very important that actually these kind of activities have not been affected even due to the nuclear negotiation that we have around the JCPOA in Vienna nowadays.
Iran stepped back from its nuclear commitments in response to the previous U.S. administration's withdrawal from the deal and the reimposition of sanctions.
Negotiations to revive the deal have been taking place in Vienna since April, with Tehran standing firm on its position. It will only return to full compliance after the U.S. has removed all sanctions in a verifiable manner. Homolizki, Vienna.
Elsewhere, an Iranian logistic vessel sunk in the Gulf of Oman. The ship was on a training mission near international waters when one of its systems caught fire. Rescue teams managed to safely transfer the crew to the nearby port city of Jask. However, efforts to extinguish the fire were ineffective. The exact cause of the incident is under investigation. The vessel was used in training missions for more than four decades. And China has rejected a claim by Malaysia that Beijing breached the Southeast Asian nation's sovereignty by flying military aircraft over disputed waters in the South China Sea. A spokesman for the Chinese embassy in Kuala Lumpur says the activities were routine flight training of the Chinese Air Force. He said the flights were in accordance with international law, ruling out any violation of Malaysian airspace. The reaction came after Malaysia's foreign ministry said it would summon China's envoy for an explanation on what it called an intrusion. Malaysia's Air Force said on Monday it scrambled 16 Chinese jets with suspicious activity over the South China Sea. The waters have been a source of tension between Beijing and some other regional countries, including Malaysia. China claims more than 80% of the area. The African Union has suspended Mali with immediate effect and threatened the country with sanctions after a second military coup there in 9 months. The AU called for Mali's military to urgently and unconditionally return to the barracks and to refrain from further interference in the political process of the country. The union warned that if the military did not hand back power to civilian transitional leaders, it would impose targeted sanctions and other punitive measures. The putsch has sparked deep concerns over stability in the volatile Sahel region and warnings of economic penalties from across the international community. Far-right extremists continue to be inducted into the British military. This week, reports of several serving members of the UK Armed Forces referred to a controversial anti-extremism scheme has rekindled fears and reignited calls on the country's Ministry of Defense to increase its auditing and vetting processes.
The UK Armed Forces' allure for far-right extremists is believed to be as old as British fascism's earliest incarnations. At least 16 members of the country's armed forces investigated over the past 2.5 years have been referred to the UK's so-called PREVENT scheme, a controversial terrorism prevention program.
The British Army is seen as being a defence of Britain and British values, but those British values are rooted in racism, as I say, and also in its history of colonialism and empire. The British military is in itself a racist institution because Britain is a racist society.
The UK Ministry of Defence is yet to release exact figures, but it says the number of investigations in 2020 was less than 10, and those so far this year, less than 5. Critics say, despite the MOD's stated commitment to zero tolerance for far-right extremists operating within the armed forces, its strong words have not always led to strong action.
Of course the British government's going to say there's a zero tolerance policy, but that is nothing in keeping with the reality when it comes to the culture that exists within the British Army because of its role, because of its history, because of its legacy, and because of its identity. The far right is on the march, not just in the UK, but throughout the West. This is a result of the socio-economic problems ushered in by the 2008 economic collapse, and the far right have been able to point the fingers at migrants and refugees and existing minority communities as being the problem. I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg. I think it goes far, far deeper, and I think there's a cover-up abroad in consequence.
Of the 14 investigations carried out in 2019 into serving armed forces personnel, a staggering 11 stemmed from far-right concerns. British paratroopers using pictures of former Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn for target practice.
Last year, the UK's top counter-terrorism officer said the fastest-growing UK terrorist threat came from the far right. A year later, the threat is still there, with critics saying the government is not taking the threat seriously enough. Saeed Bourizza, London.
U.S. President Joe Biden has declared white supremacy the most lethal threat to his country on the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre. Biden made the remark in an address to the three living survivors of the killing of more than 300 African Americans by white mobs in 1921. He stressed the importance of acknowledging the lives lost in that slaughter, noting that he is the first U.S. president ever to commemorate the event. Biden called for the U.S. to confront its long history of hatred and avoid silence about it. The U.S. president used the occasion to announce his administration's new measures against racial inequality and once again condemned the recent displays of white supremacy across the country. Australia's Victoria State extends a COVID-19 lockdown in its capital city, Melbourne, for a second week to contain an outbreak of the Indian variant of the virus. Melbourne's 5 million residents are only allowed to leave home for essential work, shopping, and healthcare issues. Six new locally acquired cases were reported in Melbourne on Wednesday, taking the total infections in the latest outbreak to 60. Australia's second most populous state entered a lockdown last Thursday after detecting its first locally transmitted infection in 3 months. Elsewhere, the virus surge in South America has also raised concerns. The World Health Organization has warned that outbreaks in the already hard-hit region are once again worsening.
The situation in South America right now remains of very high concern. 8 out of the top 10 countries reporting the highest mortality rates per population in the last week have been from the region of the Americas.
Ryan says the disease transmission in the region is intense and healthcare systems are under pressure. His comments came after Peru more than doubled its official coronavirus death toll to over 180,000. Peru is now the country with the highest COVID mortality per capita worldwide. Brazil also remains the world's second worst hit nation in terms of deaths, with more than 465,000 fatalities. India reports nearly 133,000 new coronavirus infections and more than 3,200 deaths in the past 24 hours. The country's total number of infections now stands at 28.3 million. India's overall deaths also tops 335,000. Daily deaths across the South Asian nation have seen a sharp decrease from their peak of over 4,000 last month. India's daily infections have also declined in the past week. India has been battling a second wave of COVID-19 for weeks. It's the world's second worst hit nation in terms of cases after the U.S. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-7 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Inside Israel. While economic and health experts in Israel weigh in daily on how to save the Israelis medically and financially, there is little talk regarding a consequence of the virus that could cause the most damage: mental health. Over 1.2 million Israeli adults reported deterioration in mental and emotional state, but that figure was for the first lockdown. Now, researchers report a 40% increase in that number for a total of 1,680,000.
The first is social distancing and the quarantine. Many people are alone now, and alone for long periods of time and isolated. Depression and anxiety, we've been seeing a lot of these people getting worse, and also people without pre-existing issues. It's just a problem.
The issue of mental disorders in Israel is not new. Unfortunately, it was never properly addressed by authorities, as no funds were allocated to it. And now, with the current political chaos and budget deadlock, it seems highly unlikely that the regime would pay attention to this problem.
People are out of jobs, people don't have enough money.
Even in the military, Israelis who are drafted there fake mental health disorders just to go AWOL from the military. We are talking about one-third of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. Mati Kaspi, one of Israel's leading musicians, posted a message on his Facebook page announcing that he and his family were leaving Israel in order to protect their mental health. He blames the Israeli regime for what he called the sad situation the regime creates for its citizens and culture. Mental health experts are warning of another epidemic in Israel. They say that the emotional and psychological impact of the coronavirus pandemic are no less severe than the havoc wreaked on Israel's health system and the economy. Psychologist Elad Mardo of Haifa University, who is behind the study, reports a 300% increase in requests for psychological treatment. The data shows that 25% of Israelis over the age of 21, that is approximately 1.2 million people, report a deterioration in their mental and emotional state after lockdown. This while 26% say the emotional state of their children has taken a turn for the worse. According to the professor behind the study, these are catastrophic numbers. The issue of mental health in Israel is not new. It has always been a social issue that the regime never really found a cure for. Israelis do not seek help because there are few problems. Many people do not seek out mental health services. Mental health services cost money, and as people feel the extended economic strain, mental health support is often viewed as non-essential. About 87% of Israelis with mental health issues stated that they simply could not afford to seek help for their mental health, according to a report published by the American Psychological Association. Due to almost non-existent programs amidst the political chaos and budget deadlock, there is no support for the unemployed to relieve the most severe economic distress. Steps to address the mental health issues in Israel are not being taken so correctly. Researchers point out to the lack of educational campaigns among Israelis regarding identification of mental health problems and appropriate use of mental health services offered by the health plans. Israelis are unaware of what is available.
First of all, a lot of doctors that could provide some kind of assistance or first diagnosis, family doctors, general physicians, were not available at that time. And for a while, you couldn't reach the mental health clinics. And there was a big confusion at the beginning why you couldn't reach psychologists and mental health workers. That was one source. People were locked down at home. And that caused both social isolation and a lot of anxiety among people. People didn't know what was going on. In addition, bear in mind that people were detached from and disconnected from their communities, from their schools, from their everyday life. And all that caused a lot of stress and a lot of times depression as well. So that could explain some rise in mental health states. We saw the Prime Minister showing up in himself, in person, showing up in prime time and addressing the nation. But the way he addressed it, I believe, caused more panic. He wanted to make sure that people take care of themselves, maintain social distance, maintain hygiene, wear masks, although at the beginning people say it's not helpful at all, and then suddenly became helpful. As time went by, people expressed more anxiety, I believe, due to those conferences, the daily conferences. You felt that things are changing constantly, that the decision makers often are not sure about how to handle this issue. They were learning the issue themselves. And the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. It was not an issue at all. People were worried about physical health and breaking the chains of contagion. And so the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. You know, and some we had some leaders saying also, you know, that just go out and have fun. Don't worry about it. This issue was not considered at all until it was a huge pressure from public services, psychological public services, that started stressing that the issue of mental health and mental wellness will be addressed as well. This issue was not handled at all.
On social media, here's what users said. Norian said, little is known about the Israeli Jews suffering in Israel under their right-wing regime, children being taken from parents. An estimated 200 fathers a year have killed themselves. I heard this in a podcast from an Israeli activist. There is much poverty. All people deserve humanity. Yossi Bernstein says, she bets more women will suffer from domestic violence than the virus. Priya says, world's first psychiatric corona ward has opened in Israel. I had predicted this would happen. Corona will eventually go away, but people need to keep their minds sane. It's a mental challenge for the world.
חברות וחברי הכנסת, אנחנו עוברים להצבעה על אישור ההסכם.
There is great political instability in Israel right now, and the coronavirus is being used as a political tool, for instance, to shut down demonstrations in front of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home The politicization of this COVID crisis is causing great anxiety among Israeli people, and Israeli people have good cause to question the actions of their government, even the legitimacy of their government.
The issue of mental disorders is prevalent in the Israeli military as well. In fact, 1/3 of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. To avoid the mandatory service, Israelis rely on a military law that allows recruits to receive an exemption on grounds of medical or health issues. According to Israeli law, any individual whose health standards is less than 21 points is exempted from the military service. Some pretend to be suffering from poor mental health or disability to score low grades, an act seen as extremely dangerous by Israeli authorities. The mental health crisis in Israel is impacting all sectors and parts of Israeli society. An Israeli crisis hotline says it is receiving an unprecedented level of suicidal calls, and many of them are from people who did not have any previous diagnosed mental health issues before the pandemic started. According to the nonprofit organization that is supported by the health ministry, Iran, since the onset of the coronavirus crisis, some 5,500 Israelis who are considering ending their lives have made contact. According to Iran, it took 240,000 emergency calls since the pandemic started. About 60% of these calls are about dealing with daily challenges, financial and employment problems, mental health, and identity crises. The organization stated that 86% of inquiries come from people in crisis, or what it called emotional overload. So far, according to the organization, there is no end to these numbers in sight.
Well, in recent years, we've seen reports that there is an increase in Israeli youngsters trying to avoid drafting by reporting all kinds of mental health and other issues. About half of them, about 44% of them, were ultra-Orthodox, what we call Haredim, and about pretty much the same number, about 46%, were secular. In some groups in Israeli society, it became unfashionable to go to the military. I don't think it's necessarily a result of mental health problems among young people, partly, which I'll discuss in a minute, but also that it became not such a problem, not such a stigma in Israel, not serving in the army, because it just doesn't fit me anymore and I'm not too crazy about military service and it's going to take 2 or 3 years of my life. I believe that having policies that change constantly, that are clearly affected by political issues, and decisions are not based on professional expert opinions, are very difficult to digest and to be accepted. When you see that the entire country is in lockdown, while actually only certain cities are red cities because of a high percentage of sick people, but the entire country goes into lockdown because certain groups oppose closing down just those cities, you understand that there's little professional advice involved in this issue. And therefore, the trust in one's government, in policymakers, in decision makers, in high-ranking officials has deteriorated dramatically. And therefore, you don't know whom to believe. When different ministries are fighting with each other, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Treasure.
social media, here's what users said. Medusa is done, says she's sick of war and the endless glorification of war and military violence. In Israel, so many kids are gung-ho about going into combat units and end up with PTSD and massive mental health issues for the rest of their lives, but no one talks about that. Marwa says, how about Israel pays reparations for the mental health of Lebanese who endured its terrorism and still do down south? Jonathan says, if Israel cared about the mental health of its soldiers, it would stop making them be an occupying force that denies the humanity of other people.
Some people don't agree with the service in the army, but it's a tiny, tiny minority. There is a minority of people who do not want to serve in the army for religious reasons. But there is a small, tiny minority of people who feel that they cannot serve in the Israeli army for various reasons. Some of them might be political, but it's a tiny minority. You have to understand that the people usually serve in the Israeli army willingly and not so much under duress. However, there is a small minority, a very small number, less than 1% or even less than that, who might opt for a release from the army under some kind of mental health suggestion. But this is a tiny, tiny group of people.
Researchers warn that the problem of mental health will persist with or without coronavirus because of the lack of innovative interventions. People, according to experts, need to receive appropriate mental health services, but it is almost impossible due to the limitations related to the economic, social, and technological barriers. The health ministry and the regime are not reaching out by the technology available to Israelis for their mental health care. Given Israel's multi-ethnic society, information is not communicated in a linguistically and culturally appropriate manner, researchers found. This means that the regime and bureaucracy are not using the language used by many Israelis to communicate with them. It only uses the official Hebrew language. Also, religious leaders and organizations play a prominent role in Israeli society and serve as trusted sources of mental health information and referrals. Technically, there are no too limited efforts being made to facilitate the religious and mental health care sectors working more closely together. This leaves the average Israeli citizen with mental health problems wondering how they can seek help in a helpless society.
It's goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: يا ابن آدم، لا تحمل هم يومك الذي لم يأتك على يومك الذي قد أتاك، فإنه إن يك من عمرك يأتي الله فيه برزقك.
Imam Ali said, O son of Adam, do not inflict the worry of the day that has not yet come on the day which has already come. Because if that day be in your life, Allah will bestow its livelihood as well. Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us on the program. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the son of Abu Talib. One of the great lessons, dear friends, which we learn from Imam Ali's universal persona is what kind of status Imam Ali alayhi salam had. And when we learn this great status of Imam Ali, we realize that it is he who we should follow. So Khawarizmi has reported that addressing Imam Ali on the day of the Khaybar's conquest, the Messenger of Allah said, "If I were sure a group of my ummah would not attribute to you what the Christians attributed to Jesus, son of Mary, I would say about your high position something that wherever you passed by, people would take the dust under your feet as something holy. Using the water with which you perform ablution, wudu, as a cure for their pains. But for a certain exigency, I will not speak of it. As for your superiority over others, it would suffice to say that you are from me, and I am from you. I will inherit you, and you will inherit me. Your position to me is like that of Aaron, Harun, to Moses, Musa, except that there is no prophet after me." It is so interesting, dear friends, that the Muslim Ummah has decided to cast aside Imam Ali alayhi salam, who was the most perfect miracle of the Holy Prophet, the best student of the Holy Prophet, the closest friend of the Holy Prophet, And the best, most loyal and faithful companion of the Holy Prophet. Truly, by these very words of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, these very words of the Messenger of Allah show us the great status and position of Imam Ali, and also tells us this profound lesson that if we want to follow, if we want to live, if we want to know what the true Islam is, then we must go to the door of the city of knowledge, the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. Ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger."
Thank you.
ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Attar, the producer of the program, to my brother. And at this moment, I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Fayyaz Jafar. I hope you enjoy it.
So firstly, when you want to try our very best to understand a man like Malik al-Ashtar, it's incredibly important for us to understand the idea of context. The way that the imams, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa ala would speak to their companions, toward their followers, would vary. We know a narration that states, "Kallama an-nas ala qadara uqulihim." Speak to people according to their own intellects, to the levels of their capacity of thinking. Thus, the way that the Prophet speaks toward Imam Ali alaihi salam is very different than the way that the Prophet would speak to Abu Dharr al-Ghaffari, or the way that the Prophet would speak to Salman, or the way that the Prophet would speak to Bilal. Because the ma'rifah, the knowledge, the understanding, the wisdom of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen is far different than anyone else. Which is why Salman, for instance, in the narration he states, and we know that the Prophet would state that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has divided faith into 10 parts, and Salman is on the 10th level of Iman. And even then, Salman, he would narrate that when I would look at the actions of Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, sometimes I would have no idea what he was doing, why he was doing it. So where was Ali in relation to Salman? In reality, there's no comparison. But we see that the way that the Prophet would speak to him is very different, again, than he would speak to other companions. Why do certain individuals, why are certain individuals recipients of such divine knowledge from Ahlul Bayt, while others are not? In reality, it comes down toward their submission toward their imam. For instance, when we see the relationship of Imam Ali and Kumail ibn Ziyad, if you open up Nahj al-Balagha, or if you just Google any, you know, conversation between Imam Ali and Kumail, sometimes you read the conversation, and in reality, you have absolutely no idea what the imam was telling Kumail ibn Ziyad. It's way beyond our minds, way beyond our intellects. Why does a personality, for instance, like Abu Hamza al-Thamali, why is he the recipient of the dua of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam? It's because of their devotion toward their imam and the unique knowledge and station that they had in relation toward the infallible.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.